of it with William D. Williams at 2233 North Denver Boulevard in Tulsa, the 29th of March, 1977, and Jan Sparks is doing the interview. Okay, let me get your full name. What does the D stand for?
Springs had this child. And came Meg, I've been to you since.
Okay, tell me your birthday.
March 15, 1905.
Okay. Do you have any family stories or something you'd want to tell about your parents?
My mother was, I tell this, my mother was a good businesswoman. And old man was a good mechanic because he had one of the first automobiles in Tulsa. And he worked at this ice cream, and he's skilled as a fireman on trains in Mississippi. White engineer, black fireman to shovel that coal and stuff. He had experience when he came into the territory and got a job with this ice cream company running these steam engines and turning the ice cream outfit to make to freeze ice cream. But he was in charge of the boiling and all the pulleys and things that went with it. So they were both pretty well prepared to get along. She was a seamstress. She was a school teacher. He was a photographer. He'd go around taking pictures. So
you have a lot of his pictures?
No, I don't have a lot of his pictures. Most of them, all of them, were pictures of Vern and the Rod, except a few that I had in my photo book, and I had taken it to school a day or two before. And they were saved. Would you like to see a picture?
Yeah. Did he take pictures of the family, or did he take pictures of
himself? Yeah, he took pictures of family, you know.
Great. Before we turn this off, tell me where that, for the tape, where the ice cream place was.
Right in the corner of Greenwood and Orchard.
Okay. And he called it, was it Tom?
Williams Confectionery. Right down the street on Greenwood, they had a garage, Williams Garage. They'd only bought more land and want to put a rooming house there and found out, and he's going to have his garage under the rooming house, but they had an ordinance, bad ordinance, you couldn't have that. So they had the building, wondered what to do, and put a theater there.
Now, which Williams family was this? Was this, I interviewed Mildred Penny House Williams the other day, and that's the wrong family.
Yes, Lord. Yeah, they came here from Redford in the old 20s. Redford's all black town down here.
Are there any of those Williams still around?
Mildred and her son.
Now, there were three Williams families here. Your family?
Three.
And Mildred's family?
Yeah, but there were more Williams than that. In Tulsa, yeah.
Oh, none of you were related?
No. Players Williams? No, Players came here later. I can't remember the names of, but there were more Williams. At least, when I got up old enough to recognize people were different, that they all weren't part of my family, I wasn't part of theirs. Being a small town, you know how you go around from place to place. But there were other Williams.
Oh, we were going to look at that. You don't talk
for
that. That will be good. Let's see. One of the things we want to talk about was your first home. Now, we had the picture on it?
Yeah.
The first time?
That's the place I can. I remember when we lived down on Boston, and I think it was just one room there in the ice cream making place that they let them stay, let us stay.
address?
102 North Greenwood. Yeah, it's listed in the oldest phone directory they had at the library in 1916.
And that building was destroyed during the riot?
Oh, yeah, so. And rebuilt.
So that was a three-story brick?
Right. We had 1, 2, 3 bedrooms, kitchen, bath, and a lavatory for people who trade in the confectionery.
Confectionery is on the first floor.
Right.
And the dentist office was on the second, and that was your uncle.
Dentist office was on the third floor. I was living for it on the second floor. I don't know why they did it. But that's what it was.
What was his name?
The dentist. J.J. McKee.
Now, one of the things the historical archaeologists are interested in are the furnishings, the kinds of dishes that she used, or the, say an old dining room table or a dresser or something. Can you remember any of that?
I remember this umbrella stand hall. It was in the hall and had a mirror in it. Went up where you could look at yourself, and then places on the side to hang your hats. It's about 30 inches wide. About 6 feet tall.
Do you know where they got it?
Yeah, they got that from my mother lived it. My auntie lived in Texas, and she had it. They moved from Tower to farm, and she wouldn't eat it out there. So she let my mother have it.
Oak?
Oak. That's right. It's old fumed oak, they call it.
Do you have any of those pieces left, the furniture?
Oh, no, you know, that was all destroyed in the riot. Yeah, we lived right. All of that was destroyed. We don't have any kind of furniture.
Do you remember what kind of dishes she used?
No, because we didn't eat at home. Once we ate next door, the cafe was next door. And she was busy running this. And there's a dream of the theater down there.
Yeah.
And the old man's garage was right in here. Had one stove to it. So we didn't have time to cook. I could just go to register and get me some money and go next door.
Why not that? Archaeologists are interested in is the method of trash disposal.
Back then, everybody just burned in this open. You get it just burned on the ground. These big oil drums.
Yeah. Just out behind the.
Out behind the place and burn.
What you do with things like broken dishes and things that wouldn't burn?
Well, what you do is you just been there and then you have this thing empty. When it got full of ashes and broken things and trash, man, just hauled on, and you didn't have any city pickup.
Yeah.
You just...
Was there a dump, an old central dump in Tulsa then?
You know, it never occurred to me where they were taking this. They might have been taking it out right here to town. And I didn't know of any dump.
Okay. Now, you might want to get your map out and tell me about the street. Why don't you go ahead and describe on tape those settlements that we looked at on the map, the black settlements.
You talk about the... place for that tells the settlement to 11th Street, between 11th Street and Guthrie and Briscoe down in there, because they couldn't get across the river to get to Redford, trying to get to the oil plant, they're just like whites. And so from that start, at near the river, they moved, this asset moved about over to Bowling, that section, Bowling, First Street, Shine, and down Austin Avenue. And the first business was on Austin, right where the, not the Goodwill, what's that, the John 360 Mission. Yes, see, blacks had business there as years went by, and Cincinnati up to Union Station until they built it. And he took all that land, and then he migrated to the Greenwood area, which was the third settlement. And then over at near First and, what is that, over there, the lumber company is placed in Madison. They had a small settlement over there just near the Red Lake District. And, of course, at the early 1900s also, and in the 20s, South Haven blossomed after the riot at Slate Creek out at 81st in Harvard. Had a settlement.
And you said that was also called Renty?
Yeah, it's called Renty. That was the name of the town, but everybody just called it Snake Creek because that snake, that creek on some of the maps around here had Snake Creek on it. But the,
now, you know, when this was settled down here, was this being, Snake Creek being settled about the same time Greenwood was?
No,
it after the riots that these people came down? So really, I assume it was settled before the riots, outright.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a good friend of mine. We always kidding about being from Elson. He's 70 years old.
What's his name?
Name Walter Webb.
Walter Webb.
One category I have down here is the most exciting or the most significant or the worst thing that ever happened to Tulsa.
Was that riot is the worst thing.
Tell me about the riot, what you remember about it. Has Dave been over here talking to you about that riot?
Yes, Lord. The riot was, I don't know how to start, Tim, but there's so many. It depends on where you were, your version of the riot. Well, all of us agree that it started because of the threat through the Tribune paper that they were going to lynch a Negro tonight. That was in the red. I remember it just like I was sitting there tonight now, reading that article. Just an article about that. Wide and about this long, about 2 inches long. So the blacks, by the time everybody read that thing, they mad and not going to be any lynching. Mm-hmm. They went down there with to see about it. So Bonnie Cleaver, that's a character, I forgot. He was a Mr. Gunsmoke. He's just like Marshall Dillon back then. He was, I thought he was the most wonderful man in the world because he had no fear. I saw a fellow have a gun on him. And he said, now, buddy, wait a minute now. Take that gun down. You talking to Uncle Bunny now. Put it down here. And got the man's gun. He had it on him. So that impressed me, being down there. He was at the sheriff's office down in the county building, and all this crowd was around, black and white. So they were talking. It wouldn't be any rioting tonight. It won't be any lynching. And Uncle Barney said, "I want all of you to go on back home." He said, "I'm going to stay here to see you won't be." So they all started away. And I guess about a block away, somebody fired a shot. I don't know whether it was black or white. And then right down there, it's all hell cut loose. And he fought all night. Next morning, they were trying to come in on Greenwood down there. And surrounded the place. And the militia came in. They were rounding up blacks, figured if they'd get them rounded up, would stop the thing. But see what happened, they would allow those fellows to come in behind after they'd taken them, you know, the blacks had surrendered.
Mm-hmm.
They would let them come in and loot and burn. That's where all the damage is done. Now the cause of it, the claim, it was that this girl said the boy tried to rape her on the elevator. They both worked at a building downtown. Now that's what everybody says. But you can ask him about different, you can, right now, you can get 20 people, they all have 20 versions of what happened, depending on where they were. If they were up on Standpipe Hill and saw Peg Leg Taylor shooting a lot at whites and hitting them, and or if he's down in Greenwood and Archer, where I was, had seen my old man with that rifle. Why, we all had different versions of what actually happened that morning. But I do know that they caught me about a block away from, about 4 blocks away from home, and lined me up and took me down to convention hall, down to Municipal Theater. They never did catch my dad. He got out as far as Pine Street, and one of his business associates, White, picked him up and took him home to his house. And that afternoon, the operator in the theater came down to the convention hall where they had me and bailed me out. But didn't know where Mama was, so next morning I ran into her downtown. They say it was safe to be on the streets, and I saw her, and I said, "Mama," ran across right to Third Main. And boy, it was some greeting. But
where had she been?
Oh, she had been to one of her, as I told you, she bought a lot of things in the confectionery, and one of the salesmen had taken her home to stay. But nobody knew where, none of us knew where the other was.
Were you in that group that went down to the jail that night?
No, I was just 16. I was at junior high school, 15. Yeah, 16. And my mother wouldn't let me go after you heard about it, or people coming all down the theater. Some guy got up on the stage and made an announcement. So all of you, get your gun, get your guns, and come on. They closed down the theater, and the operator was white, and so he took off and got home, because he came by the Municipal Theater that evening, got me, bailed me out, and took me out to his house to spend the night. But it's something you'll never forget. I mean, I'll never forget.
What do you think that did, besides the physical damage to the black community?
Well, because of the recession, somewhere in 1924, 25, or 26, somewhere in there, they if it hadn't been a recession, they could have built back and had the community going again. But since there was a recession, everything went bad and bad, and clean on up until the 30s. And then when the 29, the stock market broke, and 30 and 31, the depressions, and 32s, the reason I said before, they didn't get a yearbook out during all that time. And that was about the best answer I can give to that. That it just didn't get a chance to build back till after the break, till the 30s. And it was a booming, thriving place then.
And it never has been the same.
No, yeah. It was, let me see, is this a book that would be in? I had a picture of Greenwood as it was in the 30s. When it was really had buses running down the street, everybody was dressed well, and but then they had the what caused the last thing, another recession plus the 50s. That's the decision to
that was the immigration in the school. That decision.
But anyway, it was a marvelous street. People did nice business up until the 50s, late 50s. Then when the integration came in, the next impact was the large stores, the Kmart's and
chains,
that's right, chain stores that made small business, not only black but white, everywhere, just fold. So I think that's that was the advent. They had little freedom. They could go and eat at places.
When did that really start? Was that in the 50s? Up until that time, you couldn't eat downtown or?
No. Couldn't go to a theater. I know if you're going to travel from here to California, well, let's say east, here to Richmond, like I go to see my boy, I'll drive from here to Nashville today and spend the night at any motel I want to, get up the next day and drive on somewhere else and spend another night. But I know the times when if I'm going to drive from here to Virginia, if I didn't know somebody along the line where I could stop, I'd have to sleep in the car. And then food, you usually carried food with you, bananas and ham sandwiches and fried chicken. But you see, that was thing of past.
I think Dave is really interested in finding that front page of the Tribune paper.
I had a girl who told me she knew where a man who had one, she had seen it. What was her name? They used to have a little leather place.
Do you remember the headline on the paper that night?
To Lynch Negro Tonight.
That was the headline. That wasn't just the article.
That was the headline. That's why I always, what am I doing with a water bill up here? Oh, that's my wife's writing. Check number 4459. I never would go into that detail.
Yeah, it's a good season. Remember, I don't see any other reason.
anyway, this girl had seen a copy. Have you met Miss Avery?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen her works? Yeah.
I don't think Dave's been able to, the original that the Tribune had, or the microfilm
Mm-mm.
is not there. The front
no.
page is not there.
You can look all you want. That's what everybody who's looking over, even in Oklahoma City, the Historical Society. Oh, yeah. Diane Kynes.
And you think she may have one?
I know she had seen it, and I don't think she lives in it. I don't know. I received 22 pictures and one paperweight for use in research. 11/29/7. J. Layton Avery. I made her give me a receipt. I left those pictures out to a girl who was, whom I had taught, and she had become a Jehovah's Witness and came up here with this long dress on, and she was so emphatic, and she changed so, you know, and so religious. You know, I let that nut have those pictures, all the right pictures.
And you didn't get them back?
I haven't got them back yet.
Oh.
And can't find her.
Now, were those some that you took or your dad took?
No, those were some that just accumulated. My aunt had some that she had bought from a photographer who took pictures and sold mm-hmm. them, dead people and people marching with their hands up. And then some I had swapped, like this girl would have one or two that she wanted I had and I let her have, and she let, you know, would have prints mm-hmm. made.
How many people were killed?
Nobody knows. But I imagine there were at least 100. At least.
Black?
Black and white all together. See, you keep a pretty good record of blacks unless they were burned to death. And I don't think many of them would be around to burn, although I did know a fellow named Lindsay Williams, too. He wasn't related to me.
Another Williams.
He crawled under the house when they saw the fellows coming. Didn't know they were going to set the fire, so they set the fire and stood off and looked at it, and he was afraid to come out. And they went on away, but it burned down the place. He was burning all across in his chest. He wouldn't come out from under there, but he lived.
Afraid he'd be shot if it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They had us caught me at Greenwood and Easton, and a group of other fellas, they'd bring them in from different places. So we had to march down Greenwood to Archie. When we got to Archie, everything down Archie was burning, so they'd march us on over to the Frisco tracks, down the track to Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then back to the theater, Municipal Theater. And I passed where we lived, that building right there, and saw a guy. See, we were coming down this street, it was
mm-hmm.
burning down Archie, so we had to go across to Frisco Track. And I saw a guy come from up in my mother's upstairs where we lived, and had her handbag. And she had one of these leopard coats, fur coat. And pretty expensive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the belt off of it hanging out of this bag.
White guy.
Mm-hmm.
Looting.
Man. And, what could you do? Nothing. Not with all that
mm-hmm.
arm around.
Mm-hmm. Were you afraid?
Somehow I didn't get afraid. I should have been. I guess because I didn't get far enough up where they were doing a lot of killing. Because I was walking down the alley, running down there, and ran right into a guy with a shotgun. All right there, Put them up there, nigga. So I put up my hands and he searched me. They searched me. It was two or three of them. Then took me around on the street there between the ceiling down the alley and then the street on Greenwood. Took me to the theater.
Where was all the killing going on?
All around North here. All around down Greenwood, Frankfurt. Out circle in the back of, where's the hill? I'm out here now. Back of the standpipe hill, yeah. And came in the back way and met a lot of opposition, but they finally overcame with the militia too, you know.
Now who was that militia? Was that the National Guard?
Yeah.
Some black woman told me the other day that the black community was not bitter.
Was not bitter? Not now. You know, you just live over it.
How about then?
Oh, yeah, you were pretty bitter about it then. Yeah. I don't care what she says. You can see when you get everything burned.
I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe she said that.
No, I can't either. She must not have been here at the time, was she?
She was. She was little.
Mm-hmm. She was a small, you know, child, you
mm-hmm,
mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was 16 and I remember.
Mm-hmm. How did this affect your parents? Do you remember them talking about it?
Not much, because we lived in a tent for the first few months until they built back the Dreamin' Theater and had the room of living quarters upstairs. I never did hear them talk about it much, because I was selfish, more interested in myself. And what we're going to do at school, football team. Wonder if we're going to have a team. And we were getting ready to have the junior senior prom. And they burned down all the halls, you know, where you could dance halls, where you could have it. Wondering how we're going to be in school. Then when school did start, you know how a kid is. You don't associate with your parents much other than in eating time. So I don't know about their reaction. I know that they must have felt that it's a tough fight. Got to see if he can make a loan to put this building back. They finally built them back, but as I said, this recession set in and they couldn't make the payments. Sold property, trying to get enough money to make it go.
How did the white community react? Did they grant some loans to rebuild in Greenwood?
No.
Where did
most of
the
loans from black organizations like American Woodman in Denver and Lodges were the what's the name of those Odd Fellows and KPs, and then they would have black auxiliaries. You know, black, same thing with mm-hmm. black. And they had treasures built up, they could lend money. And some whites helped, you know. But such as Building Loan Association, a bank, no.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know, and I've heard this before, you said today that it was safe to go out on the street, it was safe to be in downtown Tulsa or in South Tulsa
mm-hmm.
the next day.
How did you find that out?
Uh-huh.
It was on the radio. They had radio then. I was out at this operator's house when, of course, the next day, that's all the news, the radio had, just news about the riot.
Yeah.
And said Chief Police Evans or something, whatever, said it's safe for blacks to be on the street and let's get back to normal again. So Earl took me to town. He had to go look for a job too, because he was working there with my mother. He was a movie operator. So I got out, saw a sign there, dishwasher wanted, and I went in, applied for the job and got it. I worked at one meal and went down the alley between lunch and dinner. No, they didn't serve, just served noonday lunches. I tell you what's there now, it's a hamburger, hot dog, I don't know the name of it, it's right on 4th Street.
Coney Island.
Yeah, that's right. That was a cafe there, it wasn't a Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
People would come in for the noonday lunches and I was washing dishes when I got through. I said, well, you can go now, and he gave me $1.50. I walked on down the street and walked right into Mother. Something told me to get out of there. Walked down the street and crossing the alley there right by National Bank of Tulsa and the next building to it. What's that cafe they just put in? J-Mall or K-Mall or something? Right on 3rd in Maine. Walked right into her. Oh, we had a nice time hugging and kissing. So she's going up to her lawyer's office to see if what could be done. And while she was up there, I told her, well, I'm going to run downtown, run and see what's left of the building. I got down there, I'm telling you, shows us deep sink down here. Mm-hmm. My uncle had a place up on Elgin that they didn't get, and we all piled in there on him, sleeping on the floor and everywhere.
So you stayed with him a while and then you
mm-hmm.
pitched a tent?
Yeah, that's right.
How long did you all stay in the tent?
Oh, about 3 or 4 weeks.
When was this ride? It was 1921.
Mm-hmm.
What was the date?
June 1st.
So it was warm enough weather you could...
Oh, yeah. It was nice and warm then. We were always all wondering what we were going to do when it got cold. But by the time it got cold, some people still had those army tents, you know, that
uh-huh.
would accommodate 8 cots or something. Oh, it was as big as that kitchen in there. And had boards up on the sides. And you close that old flap, they're pretty warm.
Pretty
warm. Yeah.
Gosh, you've seen so much. What kinds of predictions do you have for the future of Tulsa?
Black Tulsa? Well, I don't think it ever be like it was before. It just has to be melted in with. I believe that's the way it's going to have to be everywhere. Just melted in the community, black and white, just one community. And it's getting better. I believe it'll. A couple of hundred years from now, it will be better.
Gosh, I hope we don't have to wait that long.
As I said, I can see some good, if more than that travel deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrible trying to travel back in. It was there to get on a train. You couldn't get in a diner car until you got up, pass out of Oklahoma. You get on a diner, but Pullman, you could get a Pullman after you get up here at Caney, Kansas. Mm-hmm. I could think of, when I was working on that ship, we docked in Jacksonville about 8 blocks from down. I broke a belt one day on carriage watch. That's where you go down and meet the cabs and take the bags of people and walk them on up and see that they get their rooms. And they always tip you. You get at least $1 a trip. sometimes $3, $5. And I broke my bell, so I walked down the town to get me another one. And on my way back, I got to a street, and the green light was on. I saw the green light. I said, shoot, I got to get on back that ship. And just as I got about halfway across the street, I heard this police whistle went on. Hey, nigga, you, come here. So I turned around and went back. He said, can't you see? I said, yes, sir, I can see. He said, you one of them smart New York niggas, ain't you? I said, no, I'm from Texas. And I don't know today why I told that man Texas instead of Oklahoma, unless Oklahoma, I found out, in Virginia and Florida, right? It seemed like China to those people. And if I'd said Oklahoma, he'd been mad because he knew there just wasn't no niggas living in Oklahoma. He's ignorant, you know. He said, I want to see that sign when it turns green, I want you to walk over there. When the other one turns green, walk over there. This one turned green, come here. And back to me. And he walked me around that thing 4 or 5 times. And finally I said, boss, can't you let me go on down to this ship? I had on the Clyde Line badge and cap and uniform, you know. And about that time I heard the whistle blow. The first whistle for him to start taking the gang plank down. And he said, well, one more time I'll let you go. And finally I got over there, he says, all right, if I ever catch you down here again, I'm going to break your damn head. I said, yes, sir. And I started walking fast. He said, on the double. That's humiliation. But anyway, never will forget that. Another time I was teaching him, we took a track team down to Tuskegee, 5 boys. We didn't have 1 car, 7 of us in that 1 car. And went to Memphis, spent a night in Memphis, started south, and got down to Scottsboro, where this famous Scottsboro case, and had a flat just out of town. So we put on the spare and went on in town, stopped at the filling station. And so I got out of the car, seemed most scared. I got out of the car and I walked up, this great big pot-bellied man. I said, could we get a tire fixed here? Yeah, and he looked down. At that time, Oklahoma license plates had them on front and back. Mm-hmm. He said, what place in Oklahoma are you niggas from? I said, no, Simo was out of the car. Simo said, we from Tulsa. Tulsa? You know, I used to live in Tulsa, right up on top of Standpipe Hill. You know where Standpipe Hill is? That was the kind of thing you never forget.
You don't get that kind of hassle anymore.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Some of the best treatment I've got. Now, you see, when I travel, my wife is from Kentucky. Whenever we go to Kentucky on a vacation and drive, I'd go up to St. Louis and go that way. But now, it's so much easier to go from here, go across Arkansas, Tennessee, and my grandson and I made a trip out to Virginia last year because I had a granddaughter who graduated from Hampton. That's our old family school. My daughter went there, my son went there, I went there, and now they're children. I got another one to graduate this year. And but you see, this grandson now went out, he thinks that when you go to this motel, let's go to dining. Let's go eat. Then we go around and sit down. And what do you have? I want a steak. It was $5 steak. And he's just 11 years old. So that now it's, we stopped at a brand new motel in Hickory, North Carolina. And it was Sheraton. They had just built it. It was about 8 stories. And beautiful place. Walked in there. By that time, he was an experienced traveler. You know?
Yeah.
Come on, man, let's rush. Come on, let's go and get this bed and get it cleaned up and come back. They got a fine dining room. He'd already explored while I registered.
He already checked out what price the steaks were.
Yeah. Went around and I said, they don't have hamburgers yet. No. They got ground beef, but I don't want any ground beef. Boy, his mother told me, said, now this boy is expensive. I said, you have to kind of keep raining on him, he'll eat you out of house and home. But I didn't bother him, just let him eat. So we travel is so much better than it used to be.
You mentioned Roots a while ago. Did you watch?
Mention what?
The TV program Roots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I watched it all. And I just got to thinking, now they were from Tennessee. If I had the forethought to have gone into this with that family group, I said, they were all living. My aunties, there were 3 of them living 6 years ago. 3 of them are still alive. We've all passed in that time. Well, nothing. You can't get many word of mouth from them.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughters of, let's see, only there are 2 daughters living out of the next generation, say my generation.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who has an old family Bible that would have the dates in it?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think I asked, had one cousin come through. I think I asked about that last summer. She didn't have it. But she didn't know whether the other 2 sisters and brothers the other night.
And probably be the best source. It's supposed to be the most accurate.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to talk about that I haven't asked you?
No, the biggest thing I think is the fact that Blacks came here before statehood. They stayed through it. They built. Had dreams came through. And then it was all cut off at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a struggle building, coming back. But I know my mother always, she was a college graduate. My old man wasn't. And I had to go to college, well, or no, don't she's going to murder me. But she didn't have to do much in for it, because Mr. McGill, this teacher, I said, had inspired me. So I went on, finished Hampton, came back here to teach, and you couldn't get your master's degree in Oklahoma, so you had to go out of state. And I went out to Denver and got mine, Denver U. Got my master's degree in business education, and my daughter's an optometrist. I got that down there. She's doing well. She's got 5 kids, and they've all got 2 that have finished college now, and one is the one who finished last year is taking optometry up in Indiana. Got another one with OU. She's going in a dental school. She's already got her. And another girl we call a college tramp. She just loves to go to college. She just finished up at Wellesley. What is this school? I'm in New England. Wesleyan. Up in Connecticut, I think it is. She finished there 2 years ago and was going to take up law. She went to North Carolina and worked on a master's degree. She got a master's degree. Now she's talking about going to University of Chicago. I said, well, what? Oh, I just want to stay in school.
It's a good life.
She said, you know, I'm 25 years old. I said, you better hurry up and get you a husband, girl. But my daughter is just a real person. She's an optometrist and her husband an optometrist. They met in Chicago when she was in the school of optometry. So I'm kind of proud of my little family.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Were you an only child, Mr. Williams?
Yeah, I was an only child.
Me too.
Well, you know what I mean. You know, you don't feel it so much until you hear people say, oh, I think I went up to Hot Springs to visit my sister or my brother or something. You haven't got anybody. You're the only child. You say you're from Texas?
Uh-huh.
What place?
Canyon. You know where that is?
Southwest, isn't it?
Yeah, south of Amarillo.
Mm-hmm.
Little tiny town.
Well, that's where all the good people come from, tiny town.
That's probably right. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Think of anything.
By Jan Sparks of William Danforth Williams. End of interview.